You are. Okay. But tonight I'm happy to have two speakers here this evening. One is Charles Tack, who has spoken here before on several occasions, an extraordinary adept in the I Ching and the Book of Changes, and it's a wonderful booster of many rivers, so I always appreciate that. And Trevi Johnson, who is the author of The World is a Waiting Lover, and they will be speaking tonight on...
Desire and the Quest for the Beloved.
Desire and the Quest for the Beloved. So thank you very much for coming this evening. I appreciate it.
Well, welcome. And I'm actually, I would like to tell you the story of our meeting and then turn the most of the rest of the talk back to Trebi. But I was house sitting for a friend and I saw this book on the shelf that said The World is a Waiting Lover, and I thought, wow, what an interesting title. So I pulled it out and I looked at it, and then I looked at the introduction. It said Trebi Johnson da 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 da, she lives in northeastern Pennsylvania. I changed it. Since she lives in northeastern Pennsylvania, and I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania, and I had to know who this person was because I've never met anyone in northeastern Pennsylvania who is remotely interested in subjects. So I immediately emailed this woman, and she actually wrote back within an hour or something like that. You happened to be on the computer, and we struck up a friendship. And when I went out back to Pennsylvania to help my mother move, because my mother was in this, my dad had died, my mother was moving into with one of my sisters. So Trebi and I had lunch together and hit it off and talked about this book, what she's done with Attraction and Desire, and we compared notes with what I've done with that and decided to do a workshop together, which was scheduled for this weekend, but we're not actually going to have it. But we struck up a friendship and have had lots of conversations since, and so I was really delighted to introduce Trebi to the Many Rivers community because I think she's a wonderful writer on a subject of great interest to at least me, and actually a lot of people have apparently written about your book, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, with that...
Thanks.
Let me tell you.
Feel free to jump in any time, by the way.
Okay, thanks.
Because what was interesting about Charlie's and my connection was it turned out we both were working with the subject of attraction. Mm-hmm. And he was working with it more on an interpersonal level, and I was more working on it on sort of an interpersonal dimension, I guess you could say, or a transcendent dimension or something like that. Anyway, so that was an interesting mm-hmm. point of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to kind of just tell you the story that led to this book. The subject of the book is desire, and it's about the kind of like what I think of as the whole spectrum of desire, from erotic desire that people feel for one another, to desire to be connected to a higher being, to desire to do the work in the world that we really feel pulled to do, and all kinds of little permutations in between. And what I feel is true is that we are all have encounters with desire every day. We have many, many different encounters with desire every day. We might just not notice it or pay attention to it. It might disguise itself. It might present itself in other forms. And again, that makes it very easy to ignore. However, an event happened to me several years ago that made it impossible for me to ignore desire. I lead vision quests, which are wilderness rites of passage journeys, and I've been doing this now for about 13, 14, 15 years. And on this one particular trip, I was working with my co-guide in the mountains of southern Colorado. And these journeys are usually about 10 days long. The heart of them is a three-day solo where people go out and they sit alone in a place of their choosing and focus on what it is they need to let go of, what's drawing them forth. They listen to nature. They pay attention to what's all around them. It's a very deep and profound experience. And on this particular trip, we had a young man who was assisting us. And at the and during the time that the people were out on their solo, this young man, who I call Lucas in my book, had a dream about me in which I was standing in a cave on a mountain and singing him up to it. And there was, in fact, a real cave and a real mountain where we were, and it was quite inaccessible. And after that dream, he decided he had to go up to it. So he went up and had a quite mystical experience there. And the people came back from their solo. They told their stories. We worked with them to help them really get grounded in what had happened to them so they could take it back home and it wasn't just a dream. And then several days later, everybody was gathering in the parking lot of this ranch after we'd come down off the mountain and saying goodbye. And I was hugging them all goodbye. And Lucas said to me, "I am truly and completely in love with you." Totally out of the blue. "I am truly and completely in love with you." And so I did all the right things. You know, I did what I'd been taught. I mirrored right back to him. You know, it's really just the guide self of you, that inner aspect of your soul that's calling you up to the mountain, calling, evoking your guide, your it's, you know, it's the inner feminine in you, all those things. Went home. But it's like somewhere at the end of that day, those words started spinning over and over in my mind again. "I am truly and completely in love with you. I am truly and completely in love with you. I am truly and completely in love with you." And I just heard them everywhere. You know, I heard them in the sounds of the wind. I heard them in the birds. I heard them as the airplane engines were starting up. I heard them when I turned on the computer back home. "In love with you." And after about 3 days, I was on my way in the car with my husband, and all of a sudden it was like I was hit. It was a delayed reaction, if there ever was one. It was like arrows as arrows suddenly pierced me. And I went, "Oh my God, I'm in love with him too." It was like my whole body was just ripped right open. My heart, my mind, my sexuality, my soul. I mean, everything. It was like I was just ripped open. And I'd never had an experience like that. I'd had crushes on plenty of people in my life. I was married at that time for 12 years, very happily. I mean, I wasn't feeling like there was anything missing in my marriage. And yet here was this totally unexpected thing. And what was I going to do with it? It wasn't, like I said, I'd had crushes before while I was married. And I never thought there was anything particularly wrong with my crushes. My husband and I had talked about it. You know, you get attracted to other people. It's what you do with it that matters. We didn't do anything with it. Some people can. I'm not one of those people. But here was something that felt huge. It was not like a crush. So one of the first things I did was, which was quite unlike me, is I called Lucas and basically said, I'm with you on this. I'm truly and completely in love with you too. I didn't exactly say that, but it was kind of like that. And he said, "Oh, well, I didn't really mean it like that." He said, "You know, you were just my guide self. It was like you said, you know, it was like you were inspiring to me and your energy, blah, 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 you know." So I hung up the phone and I went, "Oh, dear." But I still felt all that passion and desire and longing. It didn't go away at all. It didn't really even change. And what I had suspected before was that this was about me and not about him. Now it's really true because he said, "Sorry, you know, we're not even going to be emailing each other about how attracted we are to each other," which is what I thought might happen. You know, that was like my wildest anticipation. "Oh, good, we'll email each other." Romantic emails. So And then I spoke to my husband about it, and he was amazingly supportive. Mm. I mean, I couldn't have done any of this work without his compassion and understanding. Basically, his idea was, as long as this isn't going to affect us, I trust you. So then I had this, okay, it's not going to work. I'm not going to have an affair with this guy. I'm not going to sneak around with him. We're not even going to have email. We're not even going to have an email love affair. What do I do now? Do I say, you're too old, you're too married, you're too sensible, you know, forget it. This is inappropriate and this is wrong. Or do I say, maybe I need to go into therapy and find out why I'm having a midnight crisis? Do I just try and hush it up? What do I do with this? And I just said, I have to find out what it's all about. I have to find out what desire is all about. And so that started this journey that led to this book and led to my leading workshops, which I've done all over the place, and led to my talking to many, many, many other people all over the place and saying, did anything like this ever happen to you? Because nobody had ever talked about this, to my knowledge, you know, when it happened to me. Nobody had ever said you can have heart-wrenching attractions to somebody when you're with somebody else and you can actually grow from it. You can find higher purpose. You can know more about love. You can become wiser. You can lose fears that you used to have. You can start all of a sudden, after a long period of time, looking at the world as a waiting lover. And that was a message that came to me out of this. That's why I call the book that. And those are just a few of the things that happened to me. And one of the first things that happened was I started reading myths, which I've always loved mythology ever since I was a kid. So I started thinking about, oh, you know, there's all these myths in which a divine or a semi-divine being comes and sweeps some mortal person off his or her feet, and then as soon as they've got their attention, this semi-divine one goes dancing off and doesn't stick around for the kiss, you know. And so I thought, well, that was really interesting. And I started looking at these myths and what they have in common and what they don't have in common. I started realizing that mystics in just about every religion, all the major religions, American Indians, often talk to God as the beloved. Because it's that great elusive force that we want to be closer to, and we can never quite be close enough. So they had two things in common. The beloved is elusive, and the beloved is alluring. It's going, come, 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 come over here. You know, I have everything you want. And so you go, and then as soon as you go, they vanish. And you just see this over and over in the myths. So there were lots of precedents, and I started naming this figure the beloved, this divine figure that does this. And through the course of doing workshops, which I started doing it maybe after I'd been working on the book for about 3 years, I started to realize that very often it's this human person that triggers this kind of search in people. And I still get, I'd say, 95% of the letters and the emails that I get about the book are by people who said, this kind of thing happened to me too. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had known earlier about your book because it really helped. And so I developed a name for this human person, and I decided to call it the escort to the beloved. So the inner beloved, which is, you can think of the inner beloved as that force that magnetizes you, that goes, come, you know, come over here, come over here. It's that emboldens you to take steps that you feel like you can't really take, but you know you have to take. That brings you into those situations where you just lose all track of time and space, and you're so immersed in what you're doing, it's like you're losing yourself and finding yourself at the same time. The beloved is what draws your attention to something that you are eager to study, that you are somebody that you want to know. And maybe you think there's no conceivable way of knowing this person, but you feel like you need to know this person, and maybe you make the opportunity. it's an invitation into the mystery. And it's not necessarily always a mystery that's new and different. It could be a mystery that's already in your life and that you need to go deeper into. So that's what I think of as the beloved with a capital B. And then there's the beloved in the smaller B, which is the beloved we all want in our life, that human person. A companion, a lover, somebody that whose mind matches our mind, with whom we have that connection. And yet very often that lowercase B is the elusive, alluring one, the one who gets away, the one you can't be with. Either because it just doesn't work out, like with me, for some kind of a reason, or you're both in other relationships, or you live too far apart, or you're together briefly and then you have to split up, or somebody dies. There's a million different reasons. Escorts to the beloved, I think, can be people that you just admire and who transform your life in some way. You know, for me, I always loved books, so there were writers that I still think of as being escorts to the beloved. Maybe musicians or scientists or people who are in the field that you're in or that you end up choosing to be in because somebody's work really made a big impact on you when you were a kid or a teenager. So these are the escorts to the beloved. And like the divine beloved, they beckon, they're alluring, they're seductive, and then we go to them and it can't be. Sometimes it can be, but that's another subject. I'll just briefly say a few words about that. Sometimes it can be because you actually end up living and happily partnered with the person that's your escort to the beloved. And if you have a lasting partnership, it's not that magical person that you first fall in love with. Because once you stick around with them, they get to be themselves. You know, you can't keep them being magical. You can't keep them being the fairy prince or the fairy princess. So even that has to transform. the escort to the beloved is still that magical thing. So I thought I'd read just a little bit about what the escort to the beloved is, and maybe tell you, give you another couple of examples of stories that people told me about the escort to the beloved. The escort to the beloved is a human being who, in the course of being loved by us, grabs our heart, seizes our soul, and turns our life around. The escort opens a doorway the daimon demands we go through, and then his job is done. This guide to our deep, authentic self might be a lover who never loved us, a first love who died or moved on, a friend, a mentor, a life partner, or a teacher. A person who's been a romantic partner for years might not be an escort to the beloved, while someone we've never even met could be. Sometimes the escort to the beloved tries to get our attention by showing up in our dreams or haunting our imagination long after he ceased to be an active presence in our lives. The escort to the beloved is the person who, by deserting us, eluding us, frustrating us, forcing us to face some truth we've been avoiding or some asset we've been trying to reject with misplaced humility, makes it possible for us to start living in a way we desperately need to and have been postponing all too long. An encounter with the escort tears us wide open. Old concepts that we have of ourselves peel away or are plucked off slowly and messily like ticks from a long-haired dog. After an escort to the beloved has rampaged through our lazy understanding of who we are, we realize that we can do things we never thought we could do, that we suddenly know how to handle situations that once confounded us. Like Cinderella, who can never go back to scrubbing the hearth, once she's twirled round the ballroom in the prince's arms, we discover through the escort to the beloved what it is to dance to the music our feet have been tapping for a very long time. How easy it is to mistake the escort for the soul's beloved, him or herself. We desire love and love being desired. It feels delectable when love is the magnetic pole that shoots through the center of our days, constantly tugging our attention away from ordinary annoyances, delays, and misunderstandings, to clamp us back to preoccupation with the very person who at that moment is no doubt being lured back to us in the same way. When we fall in love, we are like geodes, all our old rough surfaces polished to a jeweled gleam by the one who adores us, as we, polishers ourselves, perceive what sparkles beneath the loved one's surface. For millennia, poets and singers, playwrights and artists, novelists and filmmakers have turned to love for a topic that never ceases to provide sweet, fresh juice to savor. Yet what their art rarely conveys is that the polisher of those rough surfaces is not the beloved, lowercase b, but the lover's own soul quickening to the grandeur of loving and being loved. Responding to all the charms and attractions of the beloved, the lover comes alive in fresh, creative ways. The new beloved seems to possess every quality we've ever hoped for in a partner, and we want to lavish on this person all the love we've been storing up for the right occasion. We flower, we glow. Everybody loves a lover, as Doris Day perkily sang, because the lover becomes charismatic with love. We assume that it's the other person who's making us feel beautiful, strong, capable, sexy, bold, while all the time it's potent alchemical love itself, stirred up in us by the loved one that's doing the trick. So, just one more, a couple paragraphs. How to tell the beloved from beloved, capital from lowercase. How to take the fruits of love and extract them to sweeten the life we have sole charge of, so that we can walk with, capital beloved, no matter what mortal may be at our side. Love lures us as the orchid seduces the insect into its succulent orifice, and willingly the insect obeys, believing the cleverly adapted petals and stamens to be its own waiting mate. The insect zooms into the chamber of fertility and discovers there is no insect, but a being of another species just thriving to survive as all things do. There is no mate, but there is sweet pollen, and this the insect obligingly takes along as it gullibly approaches the next gorgeous Lothario. Desire lures the insect in, and unrequited desire makes it depart, loaded with the very stuff that will keep insect imitators alive and insect seeking. How do we find the pollen in the love relationship and take it forth, and not get stuck, snuggling in the lushness of the flower, demanding that the bloom transform itself into the bug we mistook it for?
Nicely written. Thank you. Got me all excited.
So that's the big question. And what's fascinating is once you start thinking about these things, that you know you start sort of seeing examples of it everywhere and hearing examples everywhere. And one of the I'm just going to have a sip of this delicious tea because I have a little sore throat. It's symphony tea, in case anybody's interested. Highly recommend it.
It's a very good Jim's special blend.
Yeah.
Jim's special
blend.
So, one, there's a movie, which many or most of you have seen, American Beauty, which is a beloved story. Here's this guy played by Kevin Spacey. His life has gotten very small. He's bored. He doesn't get along with his wife. He's dying to break out. And then he sees this beautiful young teenage siren. And she is his escort to the beloved. He thinks it's all about her, but what does it do? He starts running. He starts lifting weights. He quits his job. You know, he starts transforming. He starts smoking pot. He gains compassion for his neighbor in a way that's ultimately his downfall. And by the time he realizes that it's not about this young woman, Angela, the inner beloved has already done the work. You know, it's motivated him to really just reach sort of like such a high level of himself that he can die. You know, it's like he's done his life on Earth in a way. I never quite thought of it like that. I may think differently later, but that's what it seems to me right now. And somebody came to a workshop of mine once, and she was in a real state because she had been going on these river rafting trips. And she'd gone on the first one with her husband and had a really strong connection with her guide on the river. And the second year she went back alone. And the third year she got into a sexual relationship with this man. And she felt terrible. You know, she was a Mexican-American woman, very connected with her family, had three kids. She felt so guilty. She felt like a bad person. And she was she was desperate. And so through the course of the workshop, we started to, one of the things we work on in the workshop is, who are some of our escorts to the beloved, and what do they really have to show us and teach us? And so she began to realize that he brought out the wild side in her that she really felt was missing in her good Catholic daughter, wife, mother, member of the PTA life at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, river rafting. It's just, you don't even need a further explanation. So she decided that she was going to bring more of that wild river rafting inner beloved energy into her life. You know, she was going to take her kids school on nature hikes. She was going to start to do rock climbing. She was going to try and bring wildness back into her relationship with her husband.
Mm.
So that there was that sort of work that happened in order to transform this this really desperate situation for her. She elected not to tell her husband, but just to sort of work through what she needed to work through on her own. And I think before, do you want to add anything to this? Is this sparking anything that you'd like to interject
thinking,
at this point before we go on?
I was thinking about one of my escorts to the beloved. I would... as a woman, I just continued to be infatuated with over a long period of time, and I knew I didn't have the terminology yet that you have, but I knew there was something here, so I kept on following it, and it would be disastrous. You know, we'd have a little thing, and then it would be disastrous, and something would happen, and I'd have another one, and then another one. Over 4 years, had all these disasters, and realized I still had to follow this thing until it was done. And one of the things I realized was, and I don't know if it fits in here, but, well, there's a lot of pieces, but one for me was, this was the path I would have taken had I not gone to college. I would have married a person like this person and had that kind of a, that life in northeastern Pennsylvania. And there was something passionate about that, but also limited, that kept me from moving on. And in the realization of that, I got a greater appreciation for Pennsylvania, for what I grew up with, and the beauties that were that had happened there, so that I could say, you know, I chose to move to California, but I also appreciated the beauty of this place and people who chose to stay. So that was another, that was a piece for me on the escort.
Yeah, so it brought you into a sort of a wider understanding of your place.
Yeah.
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 That's something you were rejecting.
Yeah, that's right. And it took me a couple of times of pain actually realizing that this was part of the story. Once I realized it, I could actually embrace it and then let it go. Yeah.
When you tell that, it kind of reminds me too of how important where we are born is, because that land shapes us. And so this woman sort of escorted you back to claiming your relationship to that land.
That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I don't know if part of what we're curious about, though, is opening this into questions and also dialogue around other people's stories with their escorts to the beloved. With that, now with that terminology, what kind of stories did you have that may have led you somewhere that you didn't expect to go? Is that okay?
Yeah,
open
sure.
It? Yeah. If you're willing to share, and you can make it up as a story about somebody else.
This is just a kind of a snippet of this experience, but just I had this relationship with a spiritual teacher, so it's, and in some ways, she has been an escort for me. And unfortunately, she's decided to sort of pull out of the Bay Area and is more in New Mexico and South Africa. And I recently, just a couple days ago, received an email saying that she's going to give an intensive August 16th in Portland, Oregon, and a darshan the next day. And immediately my mind just leapt to, I'll go up there. My family, my mom and dad live there, and they're really old. I'll go up there. I have every reason to go up there anyway. And I knew it was the date of the board retreat. I'm on the board of a nonprofit, and I'm like, how am I going to tell these people that I'm just not going to come to the board retreat? Mm. And I was just sort of taken up by this wild idea that I could just leave my responsibilities and go to this intensive. And I'm still kind of lamenting that. I don't know that that's something possible for me right now. But it was just sort of a surge of energy.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting.
And opened a new possibility.
Yeah.
And spiritual teachers are definitely they're definitely escorts to the beloved.
Yeah.
And the good ones, of course, know how to hold that
energy
and let it go right through them to the to the source, or whatever you call it, God, Allah, whatever. And the not good ones take advantage of it.
Yeah,
she's really trying to teach everybody to be aware of their projections and just notice, what goes on for them. And I sure got a taste of what went on for me.
I have kind of a very classic story. After 24 years of marriage, in 2 months after my husband and myself separated, I started seeing this person, and I thought of it as just kind of a light of fear after being with one person for 24 years, in which I have not looked at anybody else, didn't have any interest, and thought of this, well, this is kind of interesting, this will be just like a fear happening, and it didn't work out. And by the time it didn't work out, I realized, and it didn't work out on a personality level, we just were not. But I put this person on a pedestal, looked up to that person, and I realized that when we, after 3 months, when we separated, that I had totally, actually a month and a half into it, I realized I totally fell in love with this person. I never in my life fell in love like that before. I actually had a pain in my heart, sort of what the poets talk about, a broken heart, where I actually felt it. Physically, my heart was physically in pain, shredded into little piece of broken glass, millions of them. I could like pick each one, one at a time, and I started looking at it as a spiritual journey of where it's an inner healing of myself, of myself connecting to the divine within myself. You would call it the spiritual going and loving myself, and seeing how disconnected I was from life, from the divine, from myself, and that took me on a real internal huge journey of healing, grief that was very, very, very deep. I worked with it for a good year until I cleared it. So, kind of like a classic story.
Yeah.
And really, it was. I'm glad you told it like that because, that's something that these myths tend to have in common too. Is that the human being who falls for this god or goddess or magical person doesn't just sort of weep and moan and cry and complain. There may be that element in it. But something else is happening, and that is that they are attaining, they're attaining their own more divine self. And these myths come from, I tell a lot of them in the book, they come from Africa and India and Sweden and Alaska and India and all over the place, and yet there's a Persia. You know, there's this thread of a person being transformed with pain, with suffering, and difficulty, but yet knowing that there is something I'm supposed to get to here. It's worth pursuing.
It's a very deepening experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And often what these escorts can do, an escort can either be somebody who sees you in a way that you're not yet ready to see yourself,
yeah.
Or they can be somebody that you see as holding qualities that you need to get to in yourself, but you're just kind of not there yet. And that will often happen, especially when we're younger. I think it's no accident that those of us here are, you know, we're not in our 20s. Because when you're younger, you know, you don't want it to be. Charlie and I were talking about that tonight. You don't want it to be about an inner beloved. You want it to be about an outer beloved. and it has to be. Maybe you're not ready. You're not ready for that yet. Mm-hmm. And so you have to kind of keep going from one person mm-hmm. to the other, or falling in love with the person who seems to be it. Probably that was truer in 30 or 40 years ago than it is now. And who seems to have those qualities that are going to kind of awaken you and make you more whole and fill in all the missing gaps. And then you get to be in your mid-age and you say, well, you know, here I am, this is me. And somebody else isn't going to do it. Hopefully we reach that stage. And then, ideally, having reached that stage or having even begun to conceive it, we start saying, okay, now what do I do with this? Am I just going to be feeling good about myself? Am I a more integrated person? And then what? What then? And so the reason the book is called The World is a Waiting Lover is that this beloved force that is awakened in us starts then to call us forth and to call us forth into all other aspects of our life and to start beckoning us all over the place, you know, with that thing, that come hither kind of attraction, so that we are drawn, for example, we walk into this bookstore and we're drawn, we have no idea what we need to walk out with, but we find the book that's calling to us. Or we're drawn to move to a certain community or to pursue a certain kind of work. And this force is working in us all our lives from the time we're little babies. You know, it draws us to our favorite teachers in school and the subjects we love and our favorite toys and the people we get crushes on, and the fields that we pursue, and the land we feel most comfortable in, and the kinds of people we like, and the kind of music we like. So this force of attraction is just everywhere. And then we get maybe older and more focused, and we start picking and choosing whether or not we're going to listen to this force of attraction. Like, well, what does that have to do anything in my life, you know? I'd like to take that, study that, learn that, read that, but I have all this, you know, I have this stack of professional things I need to read, so I'm just going to ignore that. Or, you know, I'm walking to work and I see a beautiful flower on the way into the office, and gee, I'd like to stop and smell that flower, but what if somebody sees? That wouldn't be professional. Besides, I can't possibly take 5 seconds to do that, you know. So the world is always like trying to seduce us to come and participate in it in a more full way. The world wants us to participate in us, and that's not just kind of like some vague, abstract philosophy that you could say, "Oh yeah, right." It wants us to participate in it because it's always pieces of it are always calling our attention. And what always fascinates me when on these wilderness trips that I lead is people go off for even a, like a 1 hour walk, and they all come back with totally different stories because they are different people. There are different situations roiling around in them at any given time. Different things are bothering them. Different things are exciting and attracting to them. And so they see different things in nature. Different things grab their attention. For you, it's a dead tree. For you, it's a bee. For you, it's some, you know, some a coyote track. And what does this evoke in you? What does it make you think of? What does it remind you of? What emotions does it bring up? It's the world calling and saying yes, yes, yes. And so the world is constantly giving us these invitations, and what's fascinating is to say, all right, I'm going to start paying attention to these. I'm going to say, maybe I don't really believe that there's a a divine spirit or even an inner knowing that I might call the beloved. And by the way, I think that the term the inner beloved could be applied to absolutely anything. It could be an image. It could be intuition. A friend of mine says his beloved is intuition, which whispers in his left ear. And by following his inner beloved in the form of intuition, which whispers in his left ear, this guy, who is an executive at a big pharmaceutical company, has really transformed his relationship with his colleagues. He's become much softer and more more spontaneous. And can I have a drink of water? Thank you. Or it could be just a stirring, you know, a stirring in your heart, or that flicker of life and light and interest that'll light up on certain ideas or people or throughout the course of the day. And once you start paying attention to this, it's like the world starts to expand. And we start saying, oh, okay, I really do know how to pay attention to my own allurement. And not everything has to be dived into 100%. You know, if you walk past somebody and they're doing a profession that seems interesting to you, it doesn't mean you walk straight to your office and quit your job and go enroll in this thing. But maybe it does mean you explore it. Thanks, Jim. Maybe it means you explore it. Or start studying. Get some books out about it. Start asking people about it. Yeah.
And the interesting thing, one of the interesting things that I've discovered in moving towards something that I'm excited by or helping other people move towards, is that sometimes they're actually embarrassed about it. And they don't even want other people to know about it. One guy who's a very, very successful artist that I know talked to me about wanting to teach people about art, teach young people about art. And he was so fascinated in the talking about it that I really wanted to encourage it. And what it did, though, is it became too much. And then he got embarrassed because the excitement was there. So I would also sense that it's possible that what you're drawn to, what you're fascinated by, what you're... beloved is calling you towards might be something that might feel even a little bit embarrassing. So that just feels like another little thing.
Or another word to put it, for me, it's being thinking that it's ego wanting it, and not spirit, not my true self. It must be ego because this feels too good.
That's excellent.
You feel that good, are you?
Yeah.
Exactly. So I've had that through my life, realizing that what I really desire and I think is not right, and I'm equating to what the ego wants, is actually what my true self wants.
That's an excellent point. Thank you.
I've never run into that.
So it's a it's a pretty incredible journey.
Yeah.
And it's a journey that has very profound moments, both in tiny ways, like stopping mm-hmm. and looking and smelling that flower, and in acting in surprising and beautiful and daring ways in moments of crisis, danger, sorrow, illness. It's about exceeding ourselves. It's about saying, you know, there's all of this mystery just beyond me. And some of it is calling to me, not all of it.
Yeah.
What's calling to you is probably not calling to me, and it's certainly not calling on the exact same path.
Mm-hmm.
But what's calling to me? And what is it that is going to evoke my higher self?
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I going to run off and do something rash and that's really not the best thing in this particular instant? Maybe it is rash. Maybe you do need to do it, but maybe not. Or is it something that I really feel called to do? It's really calling out the best of me. And is it something that I can I step into that mystery and say, okay, I'm ready. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's no guarantees, but I'm ready to pursue this. I'm ready to see what it's all about.
Could it also call out the worst in you? And have some kind of mysterious call that actually pulls something you don't know? It's a question, because I agree with the best in you, but sometimes we may be called to something that seems like it's not, it's ego or not appropriate, and it actually would be an opening.
Exactly. Yeah. I would say more inappropriate would be what socially might be considered inappropriate.
Yeah.
And that might be like what your story with this Latino lady.
Yeah.
That is actually a new opening.
Yeah.
In you.
Well,
that's sort of been my experience.
Let's have a little time of a few questions, and then Troy and I have a question for all of you after, if you have some questions for us.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of the purpose and how it serves humans to have this propensity to move towards something that we're attracted to? So what, maybe a shorter way of saying that is, what's the function of desire?
Wow.
And I'm not speaking just of sexual desire, but I'm
no, I know.
all its compartments.
That sounds like an evolution question.
It is. I've played with it a lot, and just
what do you think the answer is?
I'm not sure. I trust it. I think there's something that when I move towards that to which I am attracted, there I'm following something that's intrinsic to me, but it's hard to tell at times where that level of attraction is coming from,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a conditioned response or whether it's something that's really something in my core. So it, for me, it's like trying to tell the difference between my preferences and a real intuition about what's good for me. So I, you know, when I'm in a highly emotional state, I stop thinking with this part of my brain. You know, it's all limbic and reptilian. And taking time to be reflective about what's going on is kind of important.
Yeah.
Take time out in the middle of the heat of whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's almost an aside to the question of what's the function of desire?
I have an idea, and that would be, if you think about our early ancestors, tens of thousands of years ago, if you were going towards what you desired, even if it was like a place, you know, the tribe is wandering, and there's a place, and it's more appealing than another place, you might put more more energy and enthusiasm into making it a good place than if it wasn't, and that would be beneficial because there would be more care put into it.
So there's a survival kind of advantage. Mm.
Mm, possibly.
Kind of a Darwinian sense, maybe. Mm.
What fascinates me about what you were speaking about is how do we know what part of us is actually moving in a direction? And I've come to realize, I mean, that's how I use the I Ching, part of it. But the other thing is sometimes I realize I have to just go in that direction for a while to realize if it's actually giving me more juice in a real opening way or in a conditioned way that creates more karma.
Yeah.
More attachments. Huh?
Yeah.
Right, there's no guarantees.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to experiment.
Yeah. Any other comments or thoughts or questions? Or?
Well, I was just thinking this is an example you had with the cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how would you just, because that's an, I mean, it's pretty interesting, you know, it's a situation where you had so much attraction, but then when you were in that moment, it's like, no, this isn't the right thing.
I bought a new cell phone the other day, and I bought it out of, like, it was new and fancy, and there was a special deal on it. And I went home that night, and I said, I didn't really want that cell phone. All I needed was a new battery for my old cell phone. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it was I mean, it was one of those more day-to-day examples of what is desire, you know, because you, I mean, it's like, whoa, there's a lot of energy, which, you know, usually things aren't.
It was sexy in a, you know, Verizon, you know, cell phone kind of way.
But
when I got home, it really wasn't. It just didn't. So that's
I had a thing with raising my son with something like that, that I realized that if someone keeps tugging at you for a long time, then there is something to it. Because I'm also very spontaneous, like, I get excited fast, and then it kind of, I lose that interest fast, too. But I found that for my son who wanted a snake when he was 11, and he didn't stop talking about it for a year. Mm-hmm. After a year, I realized I better get the snake for my son. Mm-hmm. Well, what in the long run happened was I got attracted to the snake. Because after a year or so, he wasn't interested, as teenagers are, with pets. And it became my pet. And I never had thought I would be interested in snakes because they're not a fluffy type of animal. Right? Well, it's kind of gave me a lot of memories from ancient times of working with snake and the magic of snake and everything what they stand for, including the kundalini and all that, you know. So it was sort of like it was meant to come into my life, but I was resisting it because me having a snake at home, no way, I don't like snakes, you know. And it brought something within me.
It was like your son was your best
core.
Interesting.
Your hand and your attunement to him.
Yeah.
And satisfying his desire actually was a message to you.
That is interesting.
But that would be kind of like a logical thing if something tags at you for a long time and there's something to it.
Yeah.
Where it comes from the external or whether it comes from the internal.
Other questions for either or both?
Well, I would like to know in the journey of finding this and the writing of the book and your research, how did that transform you?
Well,
buy the book. It's in the
book. Thank you.
Okay, now you can answer.
One thing was that it really made me feel that I belonged in the world in a way that I never had before. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, I keep going back to the title, which is the title is it's like it still speaks to me. It was like I really did feel that if I was at a place, then I was meant to be there, you know, and it was not like other people had more of a right to be there, and was it okay for me to be there, and how do I prove it's okay for me to be there? I grew up with that, you know, and that was a big change. And another one was that I got more in touch with my femininity in my 50s than I ever had been when I was younger. This kind of like awakened femininity in me in lots of different ways, from being perceived as the woman who could sing somebody up to a cave. And I have a whole chapter about called Beauty Tips from Myrna Loy, which I won't go into, but that might entice you. I learned some interesting things from Myrna Loy. And so that was that's been huge, and that's still ongoing too. I mean, I really used to sort of have a big conflict about, you know, how do I look versus I want to be perceived as being smart, and suddenly it just came together. Suddenly there does not have to be a difference after all. Another big one was that I stopped, when I started developing this relationship with this inner beloved, I stopped needing so much affirmation from my husband. So I wasn't always like after him to let me know that I was doing a good job and, you know, this was a good piece of writing and blah, 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 you know. It's like I could get that from myself, or I could get it from that inner source. So those are a few of the big ways, but there's another huge way, and it's like it knocked down some kind of invisible wall for me in the world, so that I don't see people, I don't see anybody as background anymore. It's like everybody sort of pops forth for me. And I know everybody that I see. It's like I instantly know here's somebody that's gone through a lot. There's been a lot of agony and suffering. They long for things. They long for a better life. They long to transcend the current difficulties. It's just like it's just like a person's hair or face color, you know. And I used to sort of like charge through with blinders, like getting me to where I'm going, and everything else is in the distance.
Wow. Do you think the force or the quality of desire itself, like that you, in the situation you mentioned, did that desire, was it what transformed you or opened you to something inner? Or did you just find that you were that desire yourself? Or I'm kind of wondering if you could say what actually happened to that energy of desire.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. I don't think anybody's ever asked
that's
that.
That's a good question.
It's a great question. It came from partly from saying where is desire? How can all this huge, massive desire that I feel for this guy, where else is it? Does it want to go in other pathways? I wouldn't say I felt like I was desire, but I got really interested in desire, and I started to see how many kind of like branches it has and twigs and leaves and baby twigs, which are all very fascinating, and which are really great evocative forces in the lives of all of us. So I'm just still I also got just really interested in why people do the things they do. Like, why are you interested in this? What drew you to this? That sort of thing.
I think you've already told us what happened to the desire. You told us how now nobody is in the background. You are giving your attention to every to the world instead of focusing it here, focusing it here. You're letting it all in.
Is that what you're saying?
Transformed your whole world.
Instead of a block of salt, it's...
Yeah.
And crystals. Also, what I heard was... that, you know, you mentioned earlier, really having a lot of admiration for writers, and this opportunity, this desire, created an opportunity for you to write a book.
That's for
and
sure.
And become a writer.
Well, yeah.
Well, maybe you were before, but.
Well, that's truer than you know. Because I've been a writer really longer than I've been anything else, and I've published lots of stuff, but this was, I tried for 30 years to get a book published, and this turned out to be it.
Interesting.
Different kinds of books.
Wow.
I wanted to ask you how you work with, I've had a lot of experience of sort of never finding that what I'm looking for in another person. And I've tried different genders, and I even dated a transgendered person for a long time. Well, that's got to be it. You know,
it's not one or the other.
But that was more confusing than ever.
So what was your question?
Well, so I have in trying to sort of figure out, you know, why I'm like searching for this thing that seems elusive, I've decided, well, I'm searching for something that's not there. Hmm. Or it's a hopeless search. Mm-hmm. Searched for so long, so I've looked at the urge to search as an aspect of ego. It must be something that it's like searching for this pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I can keep looking for the next rainbow, but I've looked at a number of rainbows and not found it. So I've looked at it sort of from a spiritual context it must be some kind of egoic thing that is never going to be satisfied. Mm-hmm. Would you look at it from a different point of view, or?
Oh, I certainly don't think it's an ego thing. I mean, we all want to be loved by a human person, you know. I don't think that's an ego thing at all. I think it's a totally human, absolutely appropriate desire. And you can cultivate a relationship with the inner beloved. You know, there's that too. We can have both. And even if we don't have the human partner, or if the human partner abandons us or dies or doesn't live up to our expectations, we still have that relationship with the inner beloved that it can constantly be enhanced. And so, I mean, I hope you find your human beloved, and I don't think your search is a wrong search at all. And if you could be working on the other one too, you'd probably find a lot of joy even until you find the human one, and beyond when you find the human one.
You mean search for the inner beloved?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Cultivate that relationship.
Mm. Well, that relationship is one, it sounds like it's one of really loving myself, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, basically.
And yeah, and a lot more, I think. Mm. Loving the world. So, shall we ask them our question now?
Yeah.
Since it's getting to be time.
Yeah, we're almost done.
Yeah, we're almost time.
We're
going to ask you a question.
Couple more minutes. Okay.
Then we're going to be stopping. you wanted me to signal you were going to stop.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
Very subtle, right?
I love it.
Jim, we're stopping. Okay, so we were talking about how, you know, desire and attraction works all over the place and in our lives. And so we thought it would be interesting to ask each of you, including Jim and Ron, if they care to participate, what's drawing you in your life right now? You know, just like a word or a sentence or two. What's calling to you now? What's the mystery that's calling you right now, that's wanting you to step forth? Is it learning something, or is it wanting to go somewhere, or is it wanting to buy a sexy new cell phone, or hopefully it's more than that. Try and make it more than that if you can find something more than that. So,
if you'd like, if something comes to mind
and you'd like to tell us.
Well, today I'm kind of interested in learning about or thinking about belief, and I found a couple of situations that have brought that to me in quotes, and I have a letter I'm writing to a friend, but it's kind of opened up the whole question of what is how, what is the power of belief, and how does it really affect people? Anyway, I started writing about it, but I get excited about ideas and books, and you know, but the books, sometimes it's, I get interested in this person's writings, and then before I know it, there's something else that pops up, and so I just keep having this kind of string of interest.
Thank you.
But it's an exploration into belief.
Yeah.
Good. Right. Interesting.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Others? Shoshana?
Well, I think I've just come back from a sort of a dream trip I was dreaming about for a long time. And it's like wherever you go, there you are. So right now, I think that my desire is about it being an inside job. Like not being so drawn to finding a person or a new interesting endeavor, or it's really seeing that my that the energy is more seeing like my, how my inner dynamics keep me from happiness or energy, or it doesn't feel like it's those outer things at all.
Wow. So the external search led you into wanting to do more of an internal.
Yeah, it feels more like where the passion is.
Cool.
It's not looking at not as much fun in some way.
Maybe.
For me, it's a woman I had a first date with about a couple days ago, and be some really kind of juicy energy, which is kind of electric. And then the other thing is I have been doing some journeying with a group of people and in a leadership position. So, and it's I typically have always been the kind of person to like follow the script and sort of read the book in advance, you know, read the script in advance, and now I'm realizing that, you know, it's really time to let go of the script and just be it. So, in other words, create it and invent it as it's happening rather than from memory of some program.
Interesting.
Yeah. Especially given the other one, you know, and your search for a partner could be a really interesting new conjunction.
I'm really excited about what's showing itself up in my healing work. I've been doing emotional, psycho-spiritual kind of energy work for a while, kind of guided by spirit. And recently I went back to Israel where my mom was in intensive care, and did just my regular spiritual energetics work on her, and then she told me about this thing about her arm that she can't raise. Just put my, I kind of sense where it is, and I put my arm there, and the next day she was able to raise her arm, and the pain was away. So I'm excited that my gifts are more also on the physical side, because I've started working with this woman who has cancer. Just came from a session with her, and her arm is totally inflamed, and it's like and new energy is coming into her arm, and she can start moving it, and it's just whoa, I'm just really excited about it.
Wow, that's good. That's neat. Anyone else?
For me, it's about starting a new nonprofit focused on the common good. As a vehicle for raising social and political new levels of achievement, hopefully.
Sounds fabulous.
Well, I would like to invite you to, if you didn't come up, if you have something, follow it. If you didn't come up with something, let the question percolate in there, because my guess is this conversation that we're having may stimulate, let it stimulate you into allowing the question to give you an answer in the next couple days or week. So the question, let the question be there. Say, wow, I am drawn to this, and see what happens.
Okay. Thank you all for coming.
Yeah.
Thanks for inviting us.
Oh, two last things. Debbie brought a couple books. It's a fantastic book. She's a really delightful writer. Even if you didn't like the subject, she's a delightful writer. You heard some of what she read. The whole book is like this. The other thing is, she's got a...
Oh, yeah.
She's got a newsletter that she writes basically monthly.
Yeah.
And her writing comes out in that, and wonderful stories come out. And if you want to be on her newsletter, sign that sheet up there where Rob is pointing.
Is that an email newsletter?
I'm sorry.
It's an email newsletter.
Email
yeah.
A virtual
it's an email
newsletter. Thank you.
Yeah. Then they're all stories about interesting things that happen and interesting people and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, we have...